The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today is Thursday, April 30th. What to know today about the first drug that could get federal approval as a COVID-19 treatment, how the government is hoping to find solutions with a Shark Tank-like program, and the way dogs are working to sniff out the disease. Plus, whose salary will go from $40 million to zero. There's a new record for social media, and when to catch a Parks and Rec comeback. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview, where a virologist answers unique questions about COVID-19. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. The federal social distancing guidelines expire today, and President Trump does not plan to renew them. To be clear, this doesn't actually mean much since they were only recommendations to begin with, not requirements. But it signals a change in the message from the White House from stay at home to reopen with caution. The president himself has been cooped up in the White House for more than a month. Now he plans to resume out-of-state travel. He's starting with a trip to Arizona next week and says he's also considering making a trip to Ohio. Meanwhile, the U.S. death toll is still rising, often by 1,500 to 2,000 a day. As of early this morning, about 61,000 people have died from COVID-19 in the U.S. President Trump says he does not expect a second wave of COVID-19 cases in the fall and says he expects warmer temperatures and sunny summer days to contain the spread of the virus. But his own White House Coronavirus Task Force members disagree. In fact, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said a second wave is inevitable later this year. He says how we handle it will determine our fate. So if in the coming months we are able to test for the virus, track cases, and isolate every American who is exposed, we should do well. But Dr. Fauci says if we can't do that, we'll be in for a bad fall and winter. There's new evidence about a promising treatment for COVID-19. Early results from a new government study showed the antiviral drug remdesivir is effective. And once the full data is available, StatNews says it could be the first treatment shown to improve outcomes in COVID-19 patients. The research compared remdesivir to a placebo in more than 1,000 patients. Neither patients nor the doctors knew who got which. Well, it turns out the remdesivir patients recovered faster. Specifically, it took the recovery time from 15 days to 11 days. And it seems the side effects did not cause any significant issues. Remdesivir could also reduce the likelihood that patients will die, although for that part, more data is needed. At this point, the FDA has not approved any drugs to treat COVID-19 yet, but the New York Times reports it could approve remdesivir as soon as this week, so stay tuned. The National Institutes of Health is hoping to speed up the development of COVID-19 tests, so it's putting $1.5 billion in federal relief money toward this effort. The goal is to create millions of quick tests every week by the end of this summer. Axios says the NIH will set up a Shark Tank-like process, awarding money to companies with promising ideas and helping their tests get quicker regulatory approval. Of course, the most important thing will still be accuracy, but the NIH also wants to find tests that are easy to use at home. Right now, the U.S. is conducting about 1.5 million COVID-19 tests a week. Experts think we need to be doing at least 3 times that many to have a better idea of who is really infected. Well, new data shows in the first 3 months of the year, the U.S. economy shrank at its fastest pace since the Great Recession in 2008. And that's true even though the first 2 months saw growth, meaning the slowdown in March was massive. Overall, the gross domestic product, or GDP, declined 4.8% in the first quarter of this year. As a reminder, the GDP is the value of all goods and services produced in the United States. Well, since we saw such a sharp decline in such a small amount of time, the chairman of the Federal Reserve says we're looking at the worst economy in history. He also says we'll see economic data for the second quarter that is worse than any data we've seen for the economy. That's why the Fed is taking unprecedented action. It's holding its key interest rate near zero and promising to keep taking steps to offset this economic downturn. Congress already set aside $454 billion the Fed can use for additional lending programs. So far, it's used less than half that money, so expect more help from the Federal Reserve in the months to come. Remember we told you New York canceled its Democratic presidential primary? Well, now the state is facing a lawsuit over it. Former presidential candidate Andrew Yang and seven other New Yorkers decided to sue the New York Election Board in federal court. They say by cutting the presidential primary, New York is hurting down-ballot candidates. For example, people might have shown up to vote for a president and ended up voting for a U.S. representative as well. But the congressional race alone likely won't be enough to lure people to the polls like a presidential race would. For now, the primary election is still set to happen in June for other candidates and ballot issues, but just in the districts with those races, and fewer people are expected to show. We have more news coming up, but first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor this week, Function of Beauty. We don't all have the same hair, so we shouldn't all use the same type of hair products. And we don't have to. Function of Beauty allows you to customize the shampoo and conditioner formula to what your hair actually needs, and you can even choose the type of fragrance and color you like. Or choose fragrance-free and dye-free. No matter what, Function of Beauty never uses sulfates, parabens, phthalates, mineral oils, or any other harmful ingredients. The process to get started is super easy as well. I've done it. I took the online quiz to tell them about the formula I want. It was quick, with four questions where you specify several of your hair goals, like replenish your hair, anti-frizz, and or volumize. Then my personalized products arrived right at my door. And so far, it's great, including the light peach scent I chose. It smells so good. To get started, go to functionofbeauty.com/newsworthy to take your four-part hair profile quiz and then save 20% on your first order. Don't spend another minute in hair misery. Go to functionofbeauty.com/newsworthy to let them know we sent you. That's functionofbeauty.com/newsworthy. Now back to the news. Dogs are being trained to sniff out coronavirus cases. The Washington Post reports researchers are trying to teach eight Labrador retrievers and their powerful noses to detect an odor associated with COVID-19. If all goes well, dogs could eventually end up screening people at airports, businesses, or even hospitals. We all know dogs are already used to detect drugs and bombs, but that's not it. Already, they've also been trained to identify malaria and certain cancers just with their noses. The University of Pennsylvania is doing this training in the U.S., and the U.K. had the same idea, so researchers there are putting canines under similar training in hopes of eventually deploying them to airports. It's no secret by now, technology is how we connect these days, and the numbers prove it. Video sharing app TikTok has been downloaded more than 2 billion times. TechCrunch reports it saw 350 million downloads just in the first quarter of this year. That's the highest for any app in a quarter. By the way, Facebook's usage is way up as well, with 1.7 billion users last month. That said, it saw demand for advertising drop, likely because of the economic toll of this pandemic. Microsoft Teams is getting more popular, too. VentureBeat reports the workplace video chat and collaboration platform saw usage jump 70% in the last month and a half. While some tech platforms are thriving, others are struggling. The Information reports executives at Uber are discussing plans to lay off about 20% of its staff, which would leave more than 5,000 people jobless. Rival Lyft is laying off 17% of its workforce. That's about 1,000 employees. Of course, they're not the only ones hurting from stay-at-home orders. The Wall Street Journal reports aerospace company Boeing plans to cut 10% of its workforce to stay afloat. That amounts to about 16,000 jobs. And rival Airbus plans to furlough staff in France, Germany, and the UK. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says he's giving up his salary, at least for now. He usually makes about $40 million a year, but the league is trying to scale back spending. Other staffers will take pay cuts, too. USA Today reports anyone making more than $100,000 a year will see a 5 to 15% cut in their salaries. Some people might also be furloughed as well starting next week, meaning they'll be on unpaid leave. The NFL is hoping to bounce back, though. It's still planning for a regular season and will likely release the game schedule as soon as next week. The hit comedy Parks and Recreation is making its return tonight. The entire original cast, including Amy Poehler, Nick Offerman, and Chris Pratt, will reunite for this 30-minute episode. It'll be scripted. The characters will reportedly talk about how they're all trying to stay connected during the coronavirus pandemic while also social distancing. The special comeback is all for a good cause as well. It's going to benefit the nonprofit Feeding America, which is a nationwide network of food banks. The episode airs on NBC tonight at 8:30 Eastern. And that's it for the main news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, I'm talking with a virologist to help answer some of the questions coming in, including, can the new coronavirus really travel 13 feet, like one study showed? And does it live on your shoes? And what are a few factors that determine how severe this disease becomes? Dr. Paula Cannon is an infectious disease expert at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. She's here to provide the answers. Hi, Paula. Thanks so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Hi, Erica.
So let's start with some of what we do and don't know about this virus, as of right now at least. Some reports have suggested that it might be able to live in the air. One CDC study that was reported on found it can travel as far as 13 feet in the air from a patient in a hospital at least, which is obviously farther than the 6 feet we're told for social distancing. So what's your take on those two things, living in the air, the virus living in the air, and how far it can potentially travel?
Sure. So the study you're referring to was done in rather extraordinary circumstances, really, because it was sampling virus from an ICU unit in a hospital in Wuhan. So obviously very different than just, say, you know, walking past somebody in a grocery store. So while it's kind of a cautionary tale under extreme circumstances with a huge amount of virus coming from patients, I don't think it really changes the current best guidance that for everyday interactions, if you are at least 6 feet away from people, I would say you're probably still okay. Although I always say to people, this 6 foot difference kind of assumes maybe that you're both sort of standing still and not, you know, talking at each other or yelling at each other. In addition, I've also learned that most people can't actually estimate what 6 feet is. So let's put it up to 13 feet and, you know, tell people to, you know, just stay as far away as you reasonably can.
So explain that a little bit. When you're talking, even, you might be expelling some of these droplets. Is that the idea?
That's the idea, exactly. Yeah. Normally the way that this virus spreads is in, you know, mucus and saliva and things that come out of our faces. So I think people have a good understanding that that happens when you sneeze and even when you cough. But the reality is that even when you're just talking, you know, saliva is spewing out of your mouth. We can't see it, thank goodness. But we have like a little trail of mist that we leave behind us. So, you know, if you're talking loudly, and especially if you're singing, then there's a chance that you will be expelling more. So because you can never, you know, estimate that, that's why we sort of tell people to kind of back off, stand, you know, at least 6 feet away, just so that you're not walking into that little temporary mist of virus-laden saliva that could be surrounding an infected person. Sorry about the awful visual there.
Well, to that point, can it sit in the air after the person leaves? So if somebody runs by me and they're breathing hard because they're running and then I go for a walk, you know, 2 minutes later, is it possible I could walk into the droplets that they left behind a couple minutes ago?
So, you know, everything's theoretically possible, but it's also kind of unlikely because, again, even if somebody is running and breathing heavily and they're super infected and they're leaving a trail of virus droplets, you know, those virus droplets are going to be dispersed very quickly. There's always a little bit of breeze and air wherever you are, and just the movement of bodies creates turbulence. So even if it kind of comes out concentrated, it's going to very rapidly and massively get diluted.
What about our shoes after we've gone to the grocery store or gone for a walk?
So certainly the CDC report that came out a couple of days ago described the fact that in the intensive care unit, there was contamination on the floor of virus, and they also found that on the shoes of people who were in the ICU unit. So not surprisingly, people who work in ICU units, you know, change their shoes, don't bring them into their families' homes. I think for the rest of us, you know, a walk around a grocery store is highly unlikely to produce contaminated shoes. And even if it did, the walk back across the parking lot, you know, or back to your house would probably get rid of any traces of virus that may be there. So I don't think it's something we need to freak out about. Having said that, you know, a lot of families, you know, have a rule that, hey, leave your shoes outside anyway. So wouldn't discourage people from doing that.
One question we've received: does the amount of viral load you get exposed to determine how sick you might get? And really, what does determine how severely someone reacts to this virus?
That's an interesting question, and I would say we don't know. Certainly the viral load, which just really reflects the amount of virus that a person has in their body and therefore the amount of virus that they can exhale or cough out, will impact the likelihood that they could infect somebody else. It's not clear that, you know, being exposed to a different amount of virus will impact the type of disease you get, if you like. What we do know is that the biggest predictor of having a severe outcome is age, and especially as people get to be over 60 or and even more so over 80, that's probably the biggest danger. Other things we know factor in are having other pre-existing conditions, including diabetes or heart disease. And then finally, and interestingly, actually being male seems to make you more likely to have a bad outcome than being female. This virus is so new. We're learning so much about it, and scientists and clinicians are looking at differences between people who have different outcomes and trying to understand what were the drivers of those different outcomes. Because if we get a handle on that, it may open up the possibilities of different types of medicines or different types of surveillance we can do.
As always, you can read more about the news stories mentioned throughout this episode at thenewsworthy.com. Just look under the episodes tab. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with the news you need to know for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.